celebration to last throughout the years. So bring your good times and your laughter too. We gon' celebrate your party with you. Come on now.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. Can anybody remind me when was the last time Everton played and what was the score?
We've all been watching it endlessly for the last week. The wave of euphoria is still coming.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, social media has been such a pleasant place all week.
It's been hilarious at times, I think.
It might be something to do with the vast amounts of champagne that's been drunk in certain households, but
it's been a fun week, that's for sure. Yeah.
Seriously, every time I think about it, I just think, wow, it's actually happened. And I know it's only one result, you know, one away victory. It's not even, you know, we haven't won anything with it, but the fact that it happened and the manner in which it happened, I just think it's I'm sure almost every other Evertonian feels exactly the same. It's just fantastic.
Well, it's a great weight off all our shoulders, isn't it? The monkey's been got rid of, demons exercise, whichever cliche you want to come up with. It's cleared a dark cloud from the horizon.
I suppose the one disappointing thing is, and here we are on Sunday, and we haven't yet played, and we won't be playing for another sort of 30 odd hours or so, is that
that's my major rant about this Monday night football lark is ridiculous. The whole weekend screwed. It's just other people playing football. It's no good. They've got to stop this, or just don't use Everton.
Well, the bizarre thing is we've gone we'll have been 8 days without a game, and then we're gonna play six nights with Southampton, West Brom, and Chelsea. The scheduling. I mean, we know we're in a pandemic, and it's, you know, and everything's been compressed and whatnot. But we've gone from no game in 8 days or no game in 7 days to three in six. It's no wonder it has an effect on players.
Yeah. Well, you were saying before, Andy, that, you know, I started our pre-pod conversation with saying I was surprised that Leicester had collapsed at home against the Arse, and you saying, well, the word is that they're pooped.
Well, the general consensus of opinion on social media, I haven't watched the game, but I was following it on the BBC website. The general consensus opinion is that Leicester have run out of gas. You know, there was one comment that even Vardy's lost his va-va-voom. He's not got the pace that normally sees him, you know, tearing defenders inside out. You know, I mean, I know they lost Barnes to injury before the hour mark, but even so, they were 2-1 down at half-time. And like I said, a number of people saying they've just run out of gas, and maybe the scheduling of games, you know, everybody's playing at least two games a week now, on average, sometimes more.
And we're playing 3 and 6.
We've got Southampton on Monday, West Brom on Thursday, and then Chelsea next weekend, and yet we haven't played. You know, we could have had a game this week, midweek.
We could have played Liverpool again. That would have been a laugh.
Well, we've got a game against Villa to shoehorn in somewhere.
I know.
You know, I mean, the West Brom game's been brought forward because it was originally down for the day when we play City in the Cup. So they've managed to bring that forward and shoehorn it in. Why couldn't they shoehorn in the Villa game into this week? I don't know. Sooner or later, the scheduling will take its toll on players.
I think one of the aspects of the scheduling is the irregular timings of games. So
yeah.
You know, games happening, you know, like a Sunday evening game, for example, and understand why, because the broadcasters don't want to have competition, i.e. two different broadcasters don't want to be broadcasting at the same time, Premier League games at the same time. But I was talking to a sporting director this week, and he said that there's probably, he said, no, nobody's done the research yet, but there will probably be evidence of the fact that people are playing football at irregular times, and there's not the sort of the regularity. So, you know, you pretty much in a normal season, you pretty much know, and you can plan when you're going to be playing, and therefore recovery times and what happens in the recovery process, in the preparation process. Sometimes you've got two days between games. Other times you've got 8 days between games. And he thought that the irregularity of, or as much as the frequency of playing, is going to be a factor.
Well, presumably... Yeah. That's going to continue then, even if everything gets a bit more stabilised, isn't it? Because of television schedules.
Well, I think once it's an interesting one, actually, George, because once fans are allowed back into the grounds, we're going to go back to pretty much the way it was before, that not every game is going to be televised.
All right, fair play.
It's going to be televised overseas, obviously, for, you know, people in America and elsewhere. But as it stands currently, every game is televised because fans aren't allowed in the stadium. That's the reason
right,
for it.
I get it. Because 12 o'clock on a Saturday is a weird time to play competitive sport, you would have thought. I mean, you know, they're professionals and they have to do it. But there is a huge... There's no rhythm for the players to get into.
Correct. But there's a very good commercial...
When you eat and all that stuff, it must be important to athletes, professional athletes.
No, definitely. There's a commercial reason why there's a game on Saturday at 12 o'clock. That's because it's 8 o'clock in the evening in Southeast Asia and China.
Right.
So it's, right. You know, it's peak TV time, or peak time in bars for people to watch football, which is why we have a 12 o'clock game on a Saturday and a Sunday. And actually, the reverse of that at the moment. So, Everton's game kick off at 8 o'clock tomorrow. Is it?
Yeah.
That's 4 o'clock in the morning.
It's ready at 8:15.
Yeah, that's 4 o'clock in the morning in Singapore or Beijing or Tokyo. You know, anywhere in Asia, and it's significantly, those games have significantly lower numbers of viewers, and the broadcasters and the sponsors are quite upset about that.
Yeah, I can imagine they would be. I mean, because there's no fans coming, what's the odds if Everton play Southampton at 2 o'clock on a Monday afternoon? If that's likely to increase revenue to people, you know, because it's a good time for a huge television market. Why are we playing so late at night?
It's actually a very good point. Because there's absolutely no need to play at 8 o'clock in the evening. If the only people involved in the game are the people who are employed by the clubs, employed by the broadcasters, and employed by security,
it's all one, isn't it? Well, I guess Monday's game is because it's the Monday night Sky game, which is 8 o'clock. Every Monday, isn't it? There's a game every Monday.
Yeah.
So, but then when we go to West Brom on Thursday, it's a 6 o'clock kickoff. Very strange.
That's the tail wagging the dog, isn't it?
Yeah.
Funny. Anyway, it's been a fantastic week for Evertonians for a number of reasons. First of all, just in case you've forgotten, we beat Liverpool. And then... Was it Monday or Tuesday?
Monday, yeah.
On Monday, we probably had the most viewed planning committee meeting ever anywhere in the history of man.
Oh no, you're right. It was Tuesday's fault. I beg your pardon.
Tuesday.
It was Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah. the number of people that must have tuned in to the live streaming of Liverpool City Council planning committee was huge. And it all went very smoothly. And we're now in a position, as everybody who listens to this will now know, that the Liverpool City Council unanimously approved Bramley Moor Dock, or the stadium rather, at Bramley Moor Dock. So as we were talking about before, we're now in a position where it's gone to the government, and the government are supposed to take 21 days to make a decision as to whether or not they're just going to hand it back to the City Council, or whether indeed they're actually going to do something that's called calling in, which then necessitates a planning inquiry, which can take many months, as people will remember from the days of the Kirby Stadium. It's hoped by the club, of course, that that won't be the case, and that Jenrick, who's the minister responsible, will just give the nod, which would then mean that building could start work late spring, early summer.
Wow. And that got everybody excited, didn't it?
It certainly did.
Yeah.
The fact that the club haven't told anybody yet that it's going to be known as the Bill Kenwright Stadium is a bit of an issue. I don't know when they're planning to tell us that, but...
There'll be an inquiry about that.
No, I'm only joking. I hope. Yeah.
Breathe sigh of relief.
Yeah. So, if everything goes to plan and building starts late spring, early summer, we should be playing football in 3 years, well, 3.5 years' time from now, at Bramley Moor.
Wow.
And it's got people excited. It's got
got Ancelotti excited, didn't it? He said,
Yeah.
I want to be here to lead him out when all that's done.
And Bill said, you don't think you're getting that gig, do you? There'll only be one person leading them out. You know who. Anyway, sorry, I need to stop doing that. It's becoming a habit for me. But no, that was, I mean, I think that was really, it was a very interesting thing that Carlo said, because he didn't have to say it, and he certainly wouldn't have said it if he didn't mean it, because he's not going to hang himself out as a hostage to fortune in saying something that then he doesn't necessarily follow through.
No, he doesn't strike me as that kind of man at all.
Mm. No, I think he genuinely does want to be here long term. He's on a mission, isn't he? He's on a mission, and part of that mission will be, you know, the club relocating from Goodison to the new stadium, and he wants to be a part of it, and hopefully parading trophies around it in its debut season.
Well,
parading at least one around Goodison before we leave Goodison, and then parading one around the new stadium when we go there.
I would hope by the time we get to Bramley Moor, which is what, 3.5 years away, that we'll be probably going into our third successive year of Champions League football.
That would be very nice.
Because that has to be the ambition, and you know, we're going to talk, in a few minutes about 5 years of Fahad Moshiri. We're at this point now where we have to be extraordinarily ambitious for all of these things to work. There's no point in us not being ambitious as a football club in terms of what we want to achieve on the pitch. There's no point in Carlo staying that long if we're not going to achieve these things. He's not just going to stay at the club for just because he happens to like living in Crosby. He must be wanting to stay at the club because he thinks that he can actually achieve something here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And as you say, reaching the financial holy grail of the Champions League is there, but winning some silverware as well. Because at the end of the day, as fans, we want to see a captain lifting a cup and parading a championship trophy, reaching the top four in Champions League is one thing, but I think as a football fan, you want to see a trophy. You want to see the players dancing around the pitch, wearing the FA Cup lid on their head and grabbing scarves from the people in the as they come down the steps at Wembley. Yeah, that's what football fans want. You know, from a business point of view, yes, you want Champions League because of the financial revenue that generates.
Well, it's
a bit of a chicken and egg situation, isn't it? What do you want first? Do you want top four or do you want a trophy?
If we haven't won a trophy by the time we leave Goodison, Mashiri will have been here for 8 years, and we won't have won a trophy in those 8 years. Now people can look and say, well, you know, we didn't win a trophy for X, however many years it was under Bill's guidance. But that's not the point. The point is that we need to win a trophy. I mean, if we move into Bramley Moor in 2024-25, that will be 30 years.
Not good at all.
But to go back to the point that if Carlo thinks he's still going to be here and wants to be here, then he must think that we're going to achieve something in that period.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would venture to say he's probably, in his own mind, he's confident that he can do that as well. Not just, you know, he's set on it. He might not outline it in great detail, but I would imagine he's got a very, very heavily penciled in plan of where he wants to take the team in the next 2 or 3 years.
I would say definitely on that point. I think, and actually there was a piece in the Liverpool Echo a couple of days ago, it might have been yesterday, about Doucouré and about how Angelotti has a list of players that he wanted, and the club had a list of players that he wanted, that they wanted. And Doucouré was on the club's list, but it wasn't on Angelotti's list, or he wasn't on Angelotti's list. And Marcel Brands persuaded Carlo that Doucouré was worth going after, and that, in fact, that the club had been trying to buy Doucouré for 2 years. Prior to last summer, obviously under Marco Silva, but obviously failed. So clearly, if Carlo's got a list of players that he wants to bring into the club, then clearly he's got a plan. Because he's not the type of man that's going to leave it to chance, is he?
And you don't become as successful as he's been throughout his career on a whim and a prayer. You know, you don't win the kind of the level of trophies that he's won at various different clubs if he hasn't got some kind of a plan. So it would be nonsense to think that he could just do it off the cuff. He's obviously got definite ideas on who he wants and how he wants us to play. Further good news, of course, was the cementing of a contract extension for Luca Dean.
Yeah, very much so. And again, from a confidence point of view, from a point of view of the people that are in the club, do they actually believe we're on the cusp of achieving something? Dean's no fool, is he? He's not gonna stay at the club. Or extend his stay at the club if he doesn't feel that we can meet his ambitions.
I suppose that was
very significant and very positive that he was staying. Has Marcel Brands signed anything yet?
Nothing formally has been put out by the club yet, but I don't think there's going to be an issue with it.
Of course, the acid test will come in the summer. if we haven't made Champions League, bearing in mind what went on last summer with Richarlison telling and or suggesting to Ancelotti that he wanted to play Champions League, and Ancelotti saying, "Well, give me a year." If we don't make top four and we don't make Champions League, then will we keep Richarlison? If Richarlison's happy to stay, then that further cements what we've just said about Luca Digne, that he's not going anywhere because he feels we're on the cusp of something. I think that that could be the acid test at come season end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a very interesting piece, wasn't there, about Richarlison this week, talking about the levels of frustration that he himself feels when he doesn't score. I don't know, George, if you saw that.
I didn't, but it rings bells with the way he plays football. Yeah.
Yeah, and that Carlo had to sit down with him and talk to him about, actually, yes, you know, part of your job is to score, but there are times in a football match where what you're contributing other things which are equally important. And it was a really interesting insight, I think, into Richarlison, the amount of frustration and the amount of anger that he generates.
It's the pressure as well that he puts himself under. Because I read something the other day that he's, of all the forward players, he's made more tackles than any other forward player in a defensive situation. And he's forever heading corners clear. He loves being involved in the game, doesn't he?
He loves all that close contact. Dominic Calvert-Lewin's injured, and he can't wait to get his back into the centre half and go, "Come on, then wrestle this off me." You won't. I'm very fond of his attitude, and you have to say, having seen a few in our time at Goodison, he's not the most selfish striker you've ever seen. He does look, and his I wouldn't mind seeing the stats on how many assists he's made as well. I think he's important.
Oh, and, without a shadow of a doubt.
I was just looking at the table, and we've got 14 games left to play.
Mm-hmm.
And if everybody had played 26 games, we played 24, we'd be fourth, with the possibility, of a big, big match against Chelsea next weekend. If we can get something out of that, then, it all becomes possible, doesn't it?
I think we have to start looking on every game as a big game, Arkid.
Yeah.
Because we too often and Carlo's referred to this week, that we've maybe taken games too lightly. And maybe we took Fulham and Newcastle far too lightly. Well, we shouldn't take Southampton on Monday or West Brom on Thursday any lighter than we're going to take Chelsea next weekend. They're all important. They're all big games. They're games that we want to win.
Yep. Yeah. But it's kind of, it's in that scary position for Everton Football Club and Everton supporters. It's in our hands.
So we have to grab it with both hands.
Yeah. Well, it's we're not terribly good at doing that.
Well, we haven't been in the past, but hopefully now.
Most of my children's lifetime.
Yeah. I know, but hopefully now, with what's gone on in recent weeks, and with who we've got at the helm, and him having pointed it out to the players that maybe you've taken things a little bit too lightly when you shouldn't have done, so that has to stop. And we have to concentrate, and we have to be completely focused in every game. And treat every game as if it's the derby. I know that might be, it's easy to say that, but that is the attitude they've got to take into every single game. And how many times have we said it? If a team is there to be beaten and beaten severely, then do it.
I'm going to agree with that, but you've only got to look at that, you know, the goal difference thing is a point, is a literal point, and we are the worst in the top 10. We're worst of the contenders. We've got the, you know, the worst goal difference thing.
Yeah. So if we get the chance to put, you know, 4 or 5 past someone, don't be embarrassed about doing it. Do it.
Yeah. No question.
I think the difference, though, going into like Monday's game, tomorrow's game, and then the game against West Brom, even before we look at the Chelsea game, is what happened last weekend. Those footballers must be different footballers this week and forever in the future, as a result of getting that win at Anfield.
Mm.
If we were, God forbid, if we were to revert back to, you know, a sort of stuttering performance against Southampton, doesn't even just ignoring the result for a second, but you know, that like a slow start, an unsteady start, a nervous start, you know, we're careless with the ball, careless in possession, etc. Then you'd have to say that no lessons were learnt from what was obviously a joyous occasion, but actually should be a really powerful learning experience to learn about themselves as a team, but also to learn about themselves as individuals. The fact that they went there and they did what they did should mean an enormous amount to them, and should make them much more confident of what the club can achieve. And if they're not thinking along those lines, and I'm sure they must be thinking along those lines, then the club are really missing a trick, because they should be treated as different players following the result at Anfield. And I know that sounds a bit silly, but in the context of 20 years of not winning there, 21 years of not winning there, you have to use what happened positively.
Mm-hmm.
The impact of winning at Anfield shouldn't stop on Saturday night.
It should be the start of things.
It should be, exactly. It needs to be the point from which now you do everything else that we want to achieve.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, you have to say, as we have been saying, that this has been an extraordinary week. We tonked Liverpool. The manager says he wants to stay for 5 more years at least, and he's the best idea we've had in years. And Dina, who's the second best, one of the second best ideas we've had in years, he wants to stay as well. So one, you can only assume that they are pumping with it, and it will be a nightmare if they don't, you know, produce some energy against Southampton, who are a team who play on energy. But you know, they have been beaten by 9. That would be good, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, if you look at their track record since the turn of the year, okay, they beat Liverpool at St Mary's.
That's their only win in the league this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
their only other victories have come in the FA Cup. They beat Shrewsbury and Wolves.
Yep.
But they've taken 1 point from the last 8 games.
Yeah, and
fingers crossed. Here we go. Come on. Don't let us down.
But all the ingredients are in place.
Mm.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's just the team, and it's Everton. So, you know, all the confidence in the world will still be, you know, tomorrow night going, ah, please, you know, don't, oh, I don't know. Well, I do know, you know, just fingers crossed, and I hope everything you've said is going through their heads, and they come out, they can't wait, and they go for it.
Mm. Yeah, we've said it before, haven't we? You know, if you get the chance to get a back foot, you should do. You shouldn't ease up. You should go for it.
And at the same time, Andy, I'd settle for a slouchy 1-0 win.
Well, yeah, the first aim is to get the result, to get the win, but then the manner in which it's achieved, and the gap between. The gap on the scoreboard at the end. I mean, there's that famous picture of the 8-0 from 77, something like that. And you think, what wouldn't you give for an 8-0, you know, tomorrow night?
Yeah.
You know, sorry, Southampton. I know you've had a couple of pastings in the last, you know, Old Trafford and against Leicester and everything, but if you get another one tomorrow night, we're not going to shed any tears. We probably will shed a few tears, actually. Tears of joy, but that's a different issue.
Do you know how long ago it was, the 8-0?
Go on.
It was 1971.
71? Oof,
yeah.
Crikey.
Yeah. Gordon West, Tommy Wright, John McLaughlin, Howard Kendall, Roger Kenyon, Peter Scott, David Johnson, Alan Ball, Joe Royal, John Hurst, Alan Whittle, and Jimmy Husband was the substitute.
71. Crikey.
Good forward line, that.
Yeah. Mm. You remember the scorers?
I think Joe got four, didn't he?
Joe got four, yeah. David Johnson got a hat trick.
Yeah, and Bawley scored.
And Bawley scored, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was it against?
Southampton.
Southampton.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay, I missed that one.
I'm just looking at their side. Terry Payne, Mick Shannon, Jimmy Gabriel.
Jimmy Case. No. How many scousers did Liverpool field last week?
None.
And we just...
No, Alexander Arnold is a scouser, isn't he? The young kid with Curtis Jones, he's a scouser.
Right, fair play.
And we had Tom Davis.
Tom.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Rodriguez. Jimmy Ah. He's a scouser, isn't he? From Fazakerley.
James from Fazakerley. Yeah.
Jimmy Ah.
All right. So the other bit of news this week was did we celebrate 5 years? The fifth anniversary of Farhad's arrival at Goodison. George, can you remember where you were, what you were doing, what you felt like when you first heard that somebody had probably that you didn't know?
No, I can't remember where I was. I remember thinking, thank God that's over, because, you know, it was clear that we were treading water, and the kind of wisdom of football these days seems to be that you have to have massive, massive amounts of ambag before you can do anything, which I'm sure has got far too much truth in it. I don't remember, no. I do remember the first time I saw him, and he gave the briefest of interviews. And then we were, you know, into spending the money badly.
Indeed. Can you remember where you were, Andy?
I think I was at Goodison, because it was the day was announced was the, or his first appearance at Goodison was the Chelsea Cup tie.
Yeah, the fifth round game, yeah, the one with the...
Yeah, the Lukaku scored two goals, one with his left, one with his right. Great day, great game, great performance. And then we had the infamous interview with Bill and Farhad, where Bill said, what a manager.
That was where Bill was a little bit worse for the wear, I think.
Oh, he looked a bit worse for the wear. He looked like he'd been on the champagne that day, but... But and Farhad said he would give everything he could.
Yep.
And where were you, Paul? Do you remember?
I was in London at the time. And I remember very clearly, because on the Friday I got a phone call about lunchtime to say that, because everybody assumed that it was going to be the American pair, Moores and Noel, who were going to buy Everton. And I got a phone call to say that this guy, Farhad Moshiri, had sold his Arsenal shares to Usmanov. And there would be an announcement in the press in the afternoon that he'd bought 49.9% of Everton. And it actually came out earlier than they intended it to come out. It wasn't supposed to come out on the day that it did. I don't know who it was who got the leak. but they were forced to sort of scramble very quickly on that day itself. And I just remembered thinking, a bit like what you said, George, actually, at last we've got somebody that can or will allow us to compete. And I thought we were, because of the type of guy that he was and the success that he'd had elsewhere in his career, that he would come in and he would sweep the decks clean at Everton, and we would become in a not too short a period, we'd become a much more professionally run, much more competitive organization. And even to this day, still the big mystery to me is why he's never done that. Obviously, on the pitch, he's tried to do it a number of times, and you know, we've had five permanent managers in the period, not all of which have been a success, obviously. But why he's never done it with the organisation, the business, is still a huge mystery to me, because I'm convinced that he's had to spend far more money than he wanted to spend, or rather than perhaps he planned to spend, because we haven't, we haven't achieved on the pitch. So if you don't achieve on the pitch, you don't earn the big dollars in terms of prize money. If you don't get into Europe, you know, you don't earn a huge amount of money. So for the first, that's the first reason. And the second reason is that we've just, the money that he's given us, or well, he's not given it to us, but the money that he's put into the club, up to very recent times, we've just spent really badly.
No question about that.
And it is, you know, I said on Everton business matters and stuff, it's still a mystery why. I use the term that he hasn't exercised enough care in what he's done, because I can't think of another reason why we would have made so many mistakes along the way.
Or he's been overly trusting of people who were already there in situ.
You tell us, Paul, because you know your life is in business. I mean, Andy and I have got jobs. That's all the same thing. Is delegating a real skill? Because he seems not to have involved himself in delegating responsibility at all. He's arrived and very not enough, in your opinion, clearly has changed in the structure of the. Is it because he's not interested in delegation, or he's not good at it, or what?
Well, he's got so many balls in the air, so many balls that he's juggling, that he can only delegate. He can't possibly run a football club, run an organisation the size and scale of USM, of which he's chairman, and then all of his other business interests elsewhere, building a massive hotel in the Maldives, for example. He's got so many other business interests. It's impossible for him not to delegate.
He hasn't, has he? He's left people in place.
Well, that is the biggest mystery, and you know, something that I would love to have an explanation for, as to first of all, why you think that the people who put the club in the position that it was in when he bought the club are the right people to carry the club forward.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first instance, why did he have that thought? And then secondly, subsequently, given that he's now been here for 5 years, and frankly, in those 5 years, we are a less well-run club now than we were 5 years ago, why he hasn't made the changes?
I don't think me or Andy are qualified to answer that.
No, I don't think. I mean, we can all put theories out there as to why not. But ultimately, it's only he that can answer it, and of course, he never will. And whilst you know, there are many things about Everton that I'm quite happy about, my biggest concern, and you know, we talked very positively at the beginning, and I don't want to get this going in the other direction, but about, you know, Carlo wanting to stay, and the reasons, if he wants to stay, he must think that, you know, we're on the cusp of doing something really, really good. I get all of that, and that's great. My concern is that if the organization just continues to bump along as it has done for, you know, dozens of years, it affects Carlo's ability, and it affects Marcel Brand's ability to do what they can absolutely do. You know, if you've got a, I don't know, an Oscar-winning actor in a play and the rest of the actors aren't very good, it doesn't necessarily make it a good play, does it?
No.
I know that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but the point being...
Well, it's even more simplistic than that, Paul. As far as I have understood your reading of the figures, which is the same reading I've done, if we don't make Champions League football, if we don't get a big input of AMBAG, we're going to run into all sorts of financial fair play problems. And so it's almost like there's a gun at Ancelotti's head, which goes Champions League or Richarlison's up the road, and then you're just rebuilding again.
Absolutely. We'd have to sell, and we'd have to sell some of our best assets, and we'll talk about Moise Keane, no doubt, in a few minutes. So that compromises Carlo's ability to do whatever he needs to do next season. But also, the fact that we can't go out and buy the players that we want to buy, or perhaps Carlo wants to buy. We were talking earlier about Carlo having his own list of players that he wants to buy. That will be compromised because we can't afford to do that because we haven't generated enough resources either on the pitch or off the pitch in the last 5 years. And it comes a point when, particularly in football, because of the regulations around football, you can't substitute income by just the owner just throwing money at the club. If there was no financial fair play or anything of that nature, then there's no problem. You spend whatever your owner is prepared to give you. And to Mashiri's eternal credit, he's given us a huge amount. But that's actually not how football works these days. Football works these days on the basis that you can spend what you earn, not what you're given. And
right.
we just don't generate enough cash to buy the players that we want. So therefore, from a very simplistic point of view, Ancelotti is compromised. If he can't buy the players that he wants to buy to do the job that he wants to do, then he's compromised. Mm. Now, that's not saying he's going to, you know, he doesn't want to be at the club and he doesn't think that we're going to be successful. It just means that it's so much harder for him to do the job that he wants to do.
It's harder for him.
Yeah.
It's all very, you know, I mean, because all football fans have got other lives and, you know, looking up to see where the boys are and who we bought and who we're playing and can I get to the match? No, I can't, la, la, la. It's not the most crucial thing in their life. It feels like it sometimes, especially when you beat Liverpool at Anfield. It feels like, yeah, that's a lovely day. But the truth of this is, you know, as I read your article, there are a lot of questions about the 5 years of Farhad and how you would judge the success. But to Evertonians, just to play devil's advocate, the truth is, if we win 9-10 of the remaining 14 games, we will be in the Champions League and everybody will go. You know, they might have qualms, but they will go, total success. Well done, Mashiri. It took you 5 years, but here we are at the top table. And everything you're saying will remain correct, that we could have more money if things were done more efficiently. You know, we should be all over Colombia selling everything we can get out. You know, all that kind of stuff, having run a publicity department myself once, you know, I know how just not, well, you know, we were saying before, that will never make the news because Everton are not a newsworthy team. That's got to change. And that's, you know, that's ambition in a business sense. But if we get into the Champions League, it will look like Farhad's 5 years have been triumphant.
You're right, Arkid, but the acid test will be to stay in the Champions League. It's no it's no good achieving it this year and then not sustaining it for a second and a third, and hopefully
that's true,
then,
but we have
hopefully
got
then we become things established and remain in the Champions League. You know,
yeah,
getting,
but we've got
getting
the
only the first hurdle.
Yeah, but you know, that's pretty big, Andy. It's pretty serious. We'll all be jumping all over the place if we achieve it. And we've got the manager who understands how that process works and how you stay there.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
all I'm saying is that getting there, if we get there this year, will be terrific. But staying there is the really important bit.
Of course it is, you're right. But, you know, like I'm saying, they've got the most crucial object in place to do that, which is Ancelotti, because he knows what it requires. Now, for me, you know, just personally, just between us and sort of anybody else who's listening, I don't think this squad is Champions League material. And if he gets there, it will be a fantastic achievement, because as I've said far too often on this podcast, I think we're three players short. And I retain that opinion even after beating Liverpool.
So we have to hope the hope then is that by hook or by crook we can qualify for Champions League, and that will then provide the wherewithal to bring in the three players that he's got on his little notepad now.
Yeah, exactly, Andy. 100%. That's about it, yeah.
Right. So no fannying about on Monday night against Southampton. Get them buried.
No fannying about against anybody. You don't ever want to see the Newcastle Fulham performance again, ever.
Yeah.
I don't mind us getting beat, but when you don't play, that's annoying.
Agreed. And of course, that was just coming on to that. When we qualify for Champions League, that puts a whole different scenario, a whole different face on the issue of Moise Keane.
Because if we don't qualify for Europe, he is one of the things you would expect to sell to make up the shortfall.
I would suspect so, yes. Because
to me,
he's got 14 goals in 25 games for PSG. His value surely has increased. So were we not to make Champions League and were he not to want to return from loan at PSG, you know, we'd have to try and do the deal with PSG. And he's proven of a value. So it would be disappointing that we brought him here and it didn't work out. But if we managed to turn a substantial profit on the boy, then that's part and parcel of the game these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, Andy. No, I'm not going to argue that one. It just takes me back to why I became an Everton supporter in the first place. And you find a talent like that, it doesn't work for one reason or another. You send him away because you hope that's what's going to be. And Ancelotti said, and I quote, he's a very important part of Everton's future. If Everton have to sell him because of bad management, I would be gutted. Anybody who seriously supports Everton, and no disrespect intended here, thinks that perhaps Josh King is a better idea than Moise Keane, needs a reality check. And, you know, I am very, very, very much hoping that that boy's on his way back at the end of the season. Because, if we do qualify, suddenly he's got experience that nobody else
exactly.
in that team
he's
has got.
He's got experience in Champions League, and we'll need that.
And we need two players in every position. Well, for me, Moise Keane and Dominic Calvert-Lewin is a better bet than Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Josh King or Cenk Tosun or anybody else. But that may not be the manager's opinion.
To be fair, Georgie, he has actually said that he sees Moise Keane's future at Everton and he's going to play a big part next season.
I can't tell you, Paul, what that meant to me, because, you know, in the end, I'm a soppy date, and I like people who can do clever things with the football. So that I think my team plays better football than other people's teams, and he's a part of that for me. And yes, he didn't perform too well in his first season, but then neither did anybody else who was ripping up trees, were they? Not really, apart from Richarlison. And the amazing improvement in Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
It would also be a huge statement about the club if we could...
Yes, it would. That's my point, yeah.
Yeah. If we could retain his talent next year...
Please.
As against, you know, having to sell him or having his agent force a sale, if we can resist that, especially when there's good financial reasons for selling him. Let's be frank about that. You know,
Take me through, because I am really ignorant of this, and I'm interested to know. Take me through what you mean exactly by if his agent forces a sale.
Pretty much what it says on the tin. Raiola, you know, if he says a player's going to move, a player's going to move. And there's
really?
Nothing... There's nothing really a club can do about it. You know, we had that experience with Lukaku where it didn't, and I argued at the time and have argued since that the club should have put the foot down and said, no, I'm sorry, mate, you contracted here and you're staying. But the reality of it is that if an agent or if a player decides that they're going to move to another club, then 99 times out of 100, that move happens.
So, what are the points of football contracts? How long is Moise Keane's contract with Everton?
2025, so...
you're saying that if he and his agent, you know, and they've got every right to do, go, oh, no, I'd rather stay here, mate, or move back to Italy or something... That happens. No matter, nobody can go, oh, excuse me, contract signed here.
The contracts aren't worth the paper that they're written on. In terms of player retention, obviously, you know, it's important in terms of it's a legal document that proves that you own the registration of the player, but in terms of retaining somebody, it is absolutely worthless.
Wow.
And it's interesting. Yeah, I'm not a lawyer, but if no club is ever really going to want it ever to be challenged, because the whole, you know, not describing the situation very well here. If the contract situation in football was ever challenged in court, I mean, you know, it's a fundamental human right to be able to determine your own employer. If I don't want to work for a company, I don't, you know, I can hand my notice in and I can walk away. And let's remember that footballers are actually employees at the end of the day. You know, they're not contractors. It's not like you brought somebody in from the outside. They are actually employees of the club that they play for. And nobody's ever really going to want to challenge the idea that a footballer can move clubs at any time he wants to do, because that's not the way that football, the economics of football is not constructed to take into account that. Football is very special in that sense. Very different from almost any other form of employment, because it relies upon the value of a player relies upon being able to sell him to somebody else at some point in the future, and to sell him before his contract expires. When actually, if you look at the world in general, if you look in the Western world, you know, you and I, anybody listening to this, has the right to determine whether or not they wish to be employed by their current employer. You can walk out, Andy, you can walk out of your job tomorrow.
Yeah, I could, yeah. Yeah.
And but in football, that doesn't exist. So if Raiola wants to move Moise Keane, then it happens.
And Everton have no club has any power to go, no, you're contracted to work for us, you can't go.
They have. Well, they have the legal right to do so.
Yeah, they have the legal right to do it, but all you're going to end up with is a sulk, and then he's not going to play. He's not going to want to play. He ends up shining the pine on the bench, or playing in the under 23s, or not doing anything. Until he just runs down his contract.
But it also
nobody wins in that.
It also, Andy, affects your ability to buy other players, because another player coming into the club will see. Moise Keane wanted to move. Everton said no, and now he's playing for David Unsworth's under 23s. I don't want to get in that position. Thank you very much. If there's two equal clubs,
so I won't go to Everton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when we said at the start
of the podcast, Dean has signed a new 5-year contract. That's kind of like a one-way thing, is that we've promised to pay him money for 5 years. He's not promised to stay here for 5 years.
Correct.
Right. Wow. I had no idea agents were that powerful. So, you know, considering what Moise Keane went through, especially with Duncan Ferguson, all my flowery nonsense about what a good player he is doesn't count for a thing, because if he doesn't want to, if he thinks I'm not going back there, be with that lot, Ancelotti or no Ancelotti, he won't.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm unusual in the sense that I actually like Lukaku, even though he didn't treat us very well at the end. But if you think about the contempt in his voice when he was heard talking about the fact that he was not going to go back, he was not going to stay at Everton. You know,
I don't remember this. Describe it. What he was sneery.
He was away at one of the Belgian games, and he was caught on tape. Somebody asked him. Actually, it was an interview. Somebody asked him whether he was going to stay at Everton, and the contempt in his voice when he said no. You think I'm going to stay there?
Right. Yeah. It's statements like that that make you see why Ancelotti might go, I'll rise to this challenge. I'll change that. I'll do 5 years here and I'll have every footballer in the country going, no, I want to get to Everton.
Well, yeah, I want to play for that guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what you want, isn't it? You ultimately, you want a manager that people want to play for.
Because it's funny, actually, we're talking about Lukaku, because this week in the aftermath of the Derby win, he's been very, very pro Everton. He's been on social media saying how happy he was at the result. And the city's gone blue and this, that, the other.
I'm never for having anybody back. I think if you leave an organisation, you leave an organisation and that's it. Would you have him back?
I think Lukaku. I would, actually, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's come on a bundle since he's gone to Italy. I wouldn't have had him back when he left United, but I'd have him back now. He looks a completely different player.
Yeah. It'd be a real problem for me too, because as I say, I think if you leave and that's it. I'm not suggesting he is coming back. It's just an interesting one to pose. Can I bring up a little story that also a good story about Everton? And I don't know if it escaped your attention or not. There's a guy called Tony Sampson, who lives in Chicago. And
right.
Chicago Toffees, I think, on Twitter. He's one of the international fan forum members. So he's a member of Everton's fan forum. He's a Scouser, but he lives in he now lives in Chicago. He and some of the other supporter clubs in America went to Hummel, you know, our shirt manufacturers, yeah, and said, we want to do something. We want to do something that promotes the club, promotes Hummel, but also promotes each of the supporters clubs across the US. And he had he started this conversation sort of, I think, October or sometime around that time last year. Anyway, the news broke this week, and I think it's fantastic, and he needs congratulating, and everybody else that's involved in it, because it doesn't involve the club. Hummel have agreed to, and they've already done it, to produce stuff for each of the 28 supporter clubs in the US, Everton supporter clubs in the US.
Brilliant.
Each branded with their, because they've all got their own logos and obviously their own names, so like Sacramento or Chicago or Florida Blues, whatever. Anyway, there's 28 Everton supporter clubs who have joined with Hummel to produce their own merchandising. And it's absolutely fantastic. And I just think it's worthy, because we have a lot of American listeners, obviously. I just think it's worthy to bring to everybody's attention the fantastic work that they've done. I mean, this is an absolute first for supporter clubs to do this. It's brilliant news, and it's been so well done. Huge admiration for Tony for putting this together.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, Paul. Couldn't agree
now
more.
Now Everton chasing it all over South America as well. As an idea, it's a fantastic idea.
I think the club, now that they're aware of it, want to sort of extend that process, and if they can do it in South America, if they can do it in Asia, if they can do it in Australia, for example, then yes, they want to do that.
Yeah, but, I mean, the more international supporters clubs that get involved with it, the better, surely.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if we've got an Everton supporters club in Bogota and Rio de Janeiro and wherever else. You know, we've obviously got supporters clubs down under in Australia and what have you. You know, get all those guys involved in it as well.
Yeah, global, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other good thing about it, and I think Hummel need to be congratulated as well, is that 10% of proceeds of sales go to the charity, go to EITC.
Oh, come on, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting, really clever, really innovative scheme. And I know I spoke to Tony last week, and he said that the Everton community in the US is absolutely buzzing about it, because for years they've always complained that they've not been able to get club merchandising. Well, because the club didn't provide it, the fans themselves have gone and done it.
Yeah. And to have all those different brandings, imagine the next time Everton go to the States and play a game, there's going to be a minimum of 28 lots of different flags and scarves and God knows what in that stadium wherever they play, or in those stadiums wherever they play. It'll be fantastic.
Yeah.
No, well done, those guys across the pond.
Yeah, I'm delighted for them. I think it's a brilliant idea, and it's been brilliantly executed. So,
that's a great story.
Yeah.
The thing is, it'll generate sales here, because people are going to want the Husker Toffees scarf
or thinking of opening a Ria Peru branch immediately.
There you go. Get on it, bro.
My neighbour always asks, "How did
get
you
on
do
it?" Yeah.
Well, there we go, gents. We've been talking for quite a bit over an hour.
All right.
So, busy week ahead. What time's the Chelsea game next weekend?
I'm not sure on the Chelsea game. I've not got my laptop open at the moment. I think it... I don't want to guess.
Okay.
I don't want to guess. I know it's 8 o'clock Monday and 6 o'clock Thursday. I'm not sure about the Chelsea game.
But right. It must be on Sunday, Andy. Just talk amongst yourselves. I'll get it up on the app. Hang on. March.
It's another Monday, 6 o'clock.
It's Monday.
Monday, 6 o'clock.
It is, yes. Monday, 6 o'clock, yeah. Right, so it's Monday, Thursday, Monday.
Yeah. The reason for asking was the next time we get together on Talking the Blues, we will have played Southampton and West Brom.
And, yeah.
But we won't have played Chelsea until the Monday.
Right. So then the following weekend, we'll have played Chelsea and Burnley.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, by the time we talk. And of course, we don't really have time to talk about it now, but we can talk about it next Sunday, which is the meeting of Sam Allegici and Carlo Angelotti.
Ankle Lotti.
on Thursday. So a meeting of two footballing purists.
Yeah.
Albeit at opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. Hey ho. That'd be an interesting one, wouldn't it?
It certainly will.
Well, you know, defend Sam to the point of going, yeah, you're eighth. That's where I left him.
Okay. Gents, thank you so much for your time. Thank you to everybody that's listened to us. It's been a joyous week for Evertonians. And if we've just provided, say, 1% of the amount of joy that's been around this week, then very happy to have done so. But, of course, this time next week, it could even be more joyous if
we sack them scummers.
If we've stuffed the Saints and the Throstles. Are they still called
Throstles?
Oh,
here's a quiz question for you. What are Cambridge United fans called? What is the nickname? If you are a Cambridge United fan, what is your nickname? I'll leave you with that one, boys, because even though I laughed my face off when I heard the answer, I've forgotten it. You berk. Alzheimer's is entertaining. It's something really silly. I can't remember what it was now. Anyway, I'll leave you with that.
I sincerely hope you've got the answer by the time we record next week's Talking the Blues.
I'm pretty certain maybe one or two people who already know it will be texting in straight away.
I think this was a question on one of the quizzes that we've done in the past.
Was it really?
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember the answer.
Me neither.
Yeah, but I haven't read it in the last week, George. You have.
Yeah. My short-term memory. It's certain substances I take it which seems would interfere with its functioning. We could have been sponsored by those people.
Talking of short-term memory, should we start the podcast? actually, we shouldn't laugh. It's a very serious subject. Yeah. Anyway,
it is a very serious subject.
Thank you, gents. Can't remember your names, but thank you for joining us on the podcast. we will speak to you all next Sunday. Thanks a lot.